New York Center president, the co-editor of Reader 3, the co-chair of the program committee for the meeting here in 2006, a certified ACRI group relations consultant. She's a mentor in the training program. She's directed conferences in the New York Center, and she's taken all conference staff roles. Barbara has been an ACRI associate for 25 years and is also a fellow. She was the Texas Center president for a couple of terms. She's been an ACRI board member in several roles. She chaired the history project, as you saw yesterday, and it was a pleasure to work with her as her associate chair then. She was the vice president of the board. She was the president of the board, and I remember the ceremony when you got installed very fondly. See, she had two terms as the ACRI president. She was the chair of the Transition Task Force, the co-chair of the program committee for the 2006 forum, associate chair for the symposium in 2008. She, too, is a certified group relations consultant. She's directed conferences in the Texas Center and the New York Center, and she, too, has taken all conference staff roles. And just to say a word about my friends here and the presentation they're about to give, very few people are willing to take a retrospective look at work they did that for some reason didn't hold. And so I regard their interest and their willingness to do this as an act of courage that I attribute to their being who they are. So without further ado.
Thank you, Charlotte. Could not think of a better introduction to this work. Thank you. Good afternoon. Thought I would start by just sharing with you how we got here. This presentation is based on a forthcoming paper that will be published in the Journal of Applied Behavioral Science called Transforming the A.K. Rice Institute from Club to Organization. That paper is the result of earlier drafts that were presented at the 2005 ISPSO Symposium, at the 2005 OPIS Symposium, both on behalf of the ACRI Board, and also at the 2006 Symposium. And the transformation, in our mind, represents a significant component of history for this organization, and we offer our analysis of why it didn't hold. We assume in the best group relations tradition that there are multiple perspectives and that contributing them collectively will help us make meaning of transformation. Just to explain the title of our paper, club we use to describe the membership mission. An organization we use to describe the educational mission. And the focus of the change was on mission, strategy, governance, leadership, and cultural, all transformational factors. And it was focused on revolutionary change, not evolutionary. And this presentation is really focused on why it didn't hold. So we are going to offer A.K. Rice as a case, and tell you how we understand, and we're going to tell you sort of the history of the case, and then we're going to give you our analysis. And then we have designed it so that there is room for discussion. So we realize that there may be questions throughout, and if you could hold them until the discussion, we would appreciate it. And we'd like to locate it in time. Right? So we are framing the A.K. Rice case for this presentation as beginning in 1991, into 2010. And then we have it focused on four different phases. The pre-transformation, in which we talk about sort of what were the factors that led up to it, the transformation itself, then a period of stabilization and implementation, and then what we have called backlash. The sources of data for this paper are archival, so many pieces of evidence from archival documents of the A.K. Rice Institute, a consultation to the A.K. Rice Board from an OG consultant, Warner Burke, who is the third author on the paper, and Barbara and my our lived experience in role, the roles that Charlotte outlined. They are here, but given that Charlotte did that piece, we will move right on. And then as a sort of framing comment for the case, we see this as a case of organization change that was planned, theory-based, managed and implemented in a thoughtful manner. Each step was taken, was informed by relevant data. We framed the consultation according to a research-based organizational model, and it was imbued with competent leadership. Change did occur, but it did not last. The organization reverted to things as they once were. And so now Barbara will present to you the case, and then I will return talking about how we understand it and what happened. Okay, so I know many of you know this story well. ACRE was incorporated in 1975 as a nonprofit educational institution to serve at the behest of the public. By the 1990s, it had evolved from a small organization located in Washington, D.C., to a rather large, loosely coupled organization with 8 centers located throughout the United States, and the national organization, and administrator in Florida, and about 225 members, mostly mental health care professionals. In the handout we gave you, there's, there is a table on page 4 that depicts the chronology of the history of the development of the centers in the national that was actually a part of the work of the history committee. So you probably know that.
I did.
So in this period of time, then, there was ongoing confusion about the mission and purpose of ACRE. Was our purpose to solely perpetuate conferences? Were members our customers? So then moving to what we talk about is the pre-transformation phase. And by the way, can everyone hear me?
Not too great.
You could move that
a little closer. Move the mic a little closer.
All right.
Can't see.
Yeah, move the lectern.
And are there any more handouts? Are they all
you can share? Right. This side has a lot more than the other side.
So, in this, now can you hear me better? See? In this period, roughly 1991 to 90. Oh, goodness. Yeah. Thank you. Is technology working better now? Alright, so in this period that we consider the pre-transformation phase, roughly 1991-1997, and these are rough periods, of course, I'm sure you understand, there was an increased sense of fragility going on in the centers. There were much fewer conferences than in the past, and there were many more members, 225 members, and the members were becoming increasingly frustrated with their center leaders because there were fewer opportunities to work in conferences. And at the same time, it was getting more and more difficult to find good leaders in the centers. There was an overarching dependency culture in the organization, also a heroic, individualistic culture. And at the same time, there was a tremendous amount of envy and competition going on amongst the individual members, the centers, and the national organization. So this fragility was both a reflection and a cause of the fragility going on at the national level. At that time, the board of directors was comprised of representatives from each of the centers. And so the agendas for the board meetings
often consisted of issues that were going on in the centers, and the board's work became more and more internally focused, even though many of us were saying the organization is going to die if we do not become more attuned to the outside world. So in about 1997, we were fortunate enough to be designated the beneficiary of funds from Margaret Riok, and her will to us, her will to us was to be that these funds be used for educational purposes. And that really gave us a new boost of energy and excitement because heretofore we had felt, too poor to change, or among the many reasons why we couldn't change, we were too poor. Now we had some money infusing into the system and a directive really from our founder saying, here's some money, spend it on your educational mission. So we move into what we talk about as the transformation phase, which is roughly 1997 to 2003. At this juncture, then, the board came up with three major initiatives that it wanted to pursue on behalf of the organization. One was to establish broad connections with the outside environment. Another was to create a connected infrastructure. And a third was to shift to a learning culture. At that time, we launched two ad hoc committees, the Strategic Planning Committee and the Training Committee. And these two committees really became the heart of the transformation process. So we went through this process then. There were many channels opened up between the committees, the national board, and the centers. And we actually had caucuses that in each of the centers where a representative of the training committee and a representative of the strategic planning committee went to the centers and opened up dialogues to talk about the proposals that the iterative phase they were in, to take in feedback and to go back and to continue to work on these proposals. This culminated then in a membership-wide meeting in 2000. And this meeting was in New York City. The sole purpose was really to talk about the collaborative vision of ACRI. And yes.
I thought we'd have a few props with us. This was the T-shirt that everyone got. And on the back,
what does it say?
It said, it is not necessary to change. Survival is not mandatory. And it was by E. Edward Stephen.
Yes. So there was a tremendous amount of energy in that meeting, and a great sense of excitement about change, and that that change would, in fact, bring new energy and life into the organization. And a clear wish that we would begin to reach out and broaden our scope to join with our sister organizations worldwide. And it was a pretty exciting time. We were thinking we were really on track here now. So, as they say, all transformations began with the crisis, and so it was with ACRI. The catalyst for our transformation was a crisis that occurred between the Strategic Planning Committee and the ACRI Board right after this membership meeting. And we learned many things from this crisis, but one of the things that that really stopped us was the discovery that heretofore, we had thought that the resistance and ambivalence really resided in the members and some of the members and in some of the affiliates. But because of this crisis, we realized that the ambivalence and resistance was also within us. And we had been working for so many years on trying to change and help the organization change that we felt like we could no longer really make sense of what was getting us stuck without some help from the outside. So we sought outside consultation, as Deborah mentioned, Dr. Warner Burke became our consultant and worked with us for about 3 years. So in working with us then, it was his interpretation that ACRI's decreasing impact as an educational institution was because it had not been in touch with the external world. And the dual primary missions was at the heart of this insularity. And by that we mean one primary mission being that of membership to serve our members and affiliates, and the other to be an educational institution to serve the public at large. It was his finding that membership and center issues really prevented accomplishment of the educational mission. And by that I mean the concern about not getting invited to serve on conference staffs, or not being invited to serve on conference staffs enough, or what do we get for our dues. And the group process of conferences was the mode in which members were using to attempt to deal with the day-to-day organizational issues of ACRI. It was a much more sexy way of dealing with the organization than, you know, we got to do this task, we got to do that task. And so the real day-to-day work of the organization was often left undone. And so it was his consultation to us that ACRI needed to focus primarily on the educational mission if it wanted to be successful in that area. And the external environment needed to be monitored and responded to more directly. So, well, sitting around the board table at that juncture was a pretty astounding experience, and it just resonated with all of the board members who had been in this challenging time. And so we decided, and as you remember, this board was a representative board of the centers, and so we decided that what we needed to do then is to vote on which mission should become primary. And so we did, and the educational mission was voted to be the primary mission of the organization in a unanimous vote.
Barbara, may I ask, what were the other mission and visions that were being considered aside from education?
The membership mission.
Just membership.
Yes.
Okay.
By separating the educational task from the covert membership task, the hope was that ACRI would have energy to pursue the educational mission. And while membership was no longer going to be the primary task, the hope was that by expanding our educational programs, we could it would enable us to take in a broader aspect of those interested in doing the work. And so at this point then, we launched the Transition Task Force, which we affectionately called the TTF, which became a parallel structure to the board. The Transition Task Force was charged with holding and managing the new ACRI as it moved through the change process, while the existing board managed the ongoing issues of ACRI. The Transition Task Force stayed in place for about 18 months and then was appointed by the existing board to become the first board of directors of the new ACRI, with the idea that people would rotate off as we brought in board members elected from the membership. So, just in a nutshell then, in ACRI terms, the members and the centers authorized the transformation. And And they did this within a year's time by voting in favor of the training and certification program, by voting to approve the mission statement, the structure, the name, and the bylaws. And the centers authorized the transformation and the change structure through signing affiliate agreements. So in your handout, there is a copy of this model. This Burke-Litwin model was the tool for diagnosing AFRI. And because our issues had to do with mission and external environment and culture, they resided in the blue boxes, which in this model are considered revolutionary changes or transformational changes. If they were located in the red boxes, such as work, unit, climate, motivation, structure, they would have been considered transactional. But ours were in the upper boxes, and so these were the issues that guided the transformation change process. So in terms of the mission, the new mission, and you also have a copy of the full mission in your handout, and I think this is located in the bylaws of the organization. This mission statement clearly established the primary task as that being an educational mission. The target customers were defined clearly as individuals interested in leadership and organizations in the public and private sectors. Members were no longer going to be the target customers. And the principal products and services were laid out as group relations conferences, research and publications, and application events. We declared an interest in working with organizations globally to generate interest in group relations theory, and we addressed the need to build successive generations of associates and learners, which we define as people who are outside of the organization, to carry out our mission. So as to the external environment, we modified the name from the A.K. Rice Institute to the A.K. Rice Institute for the Study of Social Systems. And this is so we could be located and found instead of by somebody's last name. And we added three external directors to the board. The internal directors to the board were now going to be elected by the members at large. And centers, as I said before, were now affiliates. And affiliates, by being affiliates, they were freestanding organizations that could choose to align with AFRI, use the name. They could choose to do other things and not use a name, or they could do both. And we updated the web presence. We revamped the Leadership Institute. We began to focus more on developing strategic partnerships within throughout the U.S. and also abroad. And hiring an executive director became a priority. In terms of leadership and culture, we knew that the culture of the organization had to be modified for the change to hold. And our leadership goal was, and I'm sure this sounds very familiar to those in the room, is that leadership not rest solely with the board. As to the training and certification program, this was an endorsement of a major behavioral change for us, whereas before staff was anointed, they now were needing to go through a competency-based program, and that was to be the way in which they would be hired. And so this really underscored our value of the educational mission as being very important to us. The shift in consumer base from members to consumers was very important culturally. At this time, individuals who joined this organization were expected to work on behalf of ACRI rather than the other way around. And so if you joined ACRI, you could take up any number of ways to engage the organization, whether as a mentor, a teacher, an administrator, in governance, consultant. But it was an expectation that if you joined it, it was to further the work of the organization. And in turn, associates were provided opportunities for their dues, many of which you see in our website today. I'm not going to go through all those for the sake of time. So then we move to what we consider the stabilization and implementation phase, roughly 2004-2006. So some of the accomplishments during this period of time was the board's primary focus remained educational mission and the external environment. An executive director was hired. We published Group Relations Reader 3. We produced the forum, a number of training events, and Belgerati 2 in our efforts to collaborate with our sister organizations. The training and certification program was succeeding. It was bringing in new trainees and new mentors, and the affiliates all renewed their affiliate agreements, not without pause. And we launched a number of strategic partnerships, and we established the Global Community Connections Fund. Some of the challenges during this period of time is that there was now beginning to be a significant turnover in the board, and so it became more of a challenge to hold on to the educational focus as primary. Attendance at our Leadership Institute continued to be a problem. Many of the issues, cultural issues, were still alive and well in ACRI. The dependency culture, the heroic individualistic culture, the envy and competition, the strong envy and competition issues that we talked about earlier. And now, many of the affiliates were holding the membership task as primary. The transformation required increased expenses, and we were very hard hit by forces in the external environment. So this period, backlash, 2006 to 2010, our hypothesis is that the collective resentment within the organization related to ACRI's transformation precipitated a reaction, so that instead of furthering the educational mission as the primary mission of ACRI, or allowing ACRI to simply drift back to dual missions of education and membership, the Institute made an unprecedented shift towards making the membership the primary mission of ACRI. Some of the accomplishments during this time period, the educational events spawned during earlier years brought in better revenue than expected. The Leadership Institute changed the theme to one more international in character. Belgerati was considered a great success. Volume 2 has recently been published. And we had the ACRI Symposiums 2008-2010. As to the leadership and external environment, by 2007, the turnover in the board was complete. There were no longer any members that had been in the transition task force or the other board during that transformational process. The internal directors, some of them were also affiliate presidents. And as I said before, many of the affiliates had been holding the membership task. No external directors attended the 2008 symposium, which of course is the only venue where everybody, all of us, are invited to attend and have discourse. The executive director was terminated, funding being a critical issue, and the links between ACRI, its educational mission, and external environment once again became obscure. Our president at that time wrote that she felt pulled to expend major efforts to repair breaks and to build and rebuild relationships. In terms of the training and certification program, the training and certification program is undermined by the Institute's revised policy stance regarding the hiring of conference staff. Whereas before, conference directors were once bound to adhere to the competency-based criteria and standards policy established during the transformation, the revised stance gives directors more autonomy to make staff choices and gives them accountability, for the choices that they make. So, as a practical matter, directors are freed up to choose conference staff with less regard for ACRI policy. There's a lacking in accountability, in our view, and a lack of oversight as to these issues. So, in terms of members and affiliates, by 2008, the board concluded that advancing the educational mission as the primary mission of ACRI was misplaced, and so that the solution to the financial crisis was to increase dues by increasing membership size and to focus on member and affiliate needs. The new website is dedicated, or was dedicated to attracting new members, and speaking authority was resumed with an emphasis now on the personal and professional activities of the members. The Institute revised the criterion for associate status in an effort to increase membership size. Whereas before, to be an associate, one had to attend a conference of at least 5 days in duration. Now, individuals can join as an associate so long as they have participated in an experiential group relations conference or equivalent educational event of any duration. So, for the first time since ACRI's inception, ACRI has, for all practical purposes, no real standards for becoming an associate. Associates joining ACRI under these revised criteria are no longer expected to further the work of ACRI. So in 2009, the board warned that without increasing the financial base, ACRI could no longer be sustained in its present form. So the drive for increasing membership size became ever more vital. ACRI, at the same time, was unclear as to its direction, aside from gaining more members and providing members with more benefits. In a recent survey, members were asked why they decided to become a member. And all of the reasons that were given that you could check on the form assumed that individuals joined expecting to receive benefits and services. For example, join for the opportunity to learn more about group relations. I joined to support my professional development in group relations. I joined to network with other people. I joined to access publications. I joined as an opportunity to be a consultant in a group relations conference. And none of them, I mean, you could fill out a, you know, you could write it in, but there was no list of an option that you joined to serve ACRI and further its purpose as an educational institution. So by reacting against an institution focused primarily on an educational mission, serving at the behest of the public, and by moving toward a membership organization focused primarily on recruiting and serving members and affiliates with less regard for public interest, the Institute has abandoned its 1975 Certificate of Incorporation, and the transformation of ACRI did not hold.
So looking at why it did not hold, we have five different influences that we will speak to. And sometimes there is confluence between these factors, and so when that happens, I will share. So the first one is the implications of a volunteer organization. And those of us inside ACRI know what it's like to work in a volunteer organization. And so how we think this contributed to the transformation not holding is that there wasn't a long list of successors to continue to do the work of the transformation. And we think that that indicated that there wasn't widespread commitment to it. And that by not having a long list of successors who were supporting the vision for change, it inadvertently invited those who opposed the transformation to occupy positions of leadership. And so without strong countervailing forces, the fragile transformation was undone. The second factor is the implications of a loosely coupled system. ACRI is a loosely coupled system, right? It has a national and it has lots of centers, affiliates, and those centers and affiliates are the loosely coupled elements. We did not approach the transformational process as if we were consulting to a loosely coupled system. We approached it as if the loosely coupled system was what needed to be changed. And so as a result, the consultant may have been overly aligned with the board and insufficiently attuned to the board's relationships with the centers. At the time, we understood that that he was working with the board because the board was a representative group having been voted in by the centers. In retrospect, we understand this as one of the failings. We think that as a result, the associates and affiliates may have experienced the consultant and the board as working top-down and not sufficiently engaging them. And while in retrospect, you know, we think that it may have been too simplistic a view, we don't necessarily think it was, you know, completely inappropriate. The third factor is the implications of trying to change deep structure. And so what we mean by deep structure is what Gersick refers to as kind of the organization's, the fundamental components of an organizational culture. There are sort of decisions that were made early on about the organization that are fateful for the way in which the organization unfolds. And so trying to change deep structure doesn't come easily. It requires a perturbation, a revolution. And so for a moment, we're going to go back to how ACRI was formed, right? And because some of the choices that were made back then we see as influencing some of the challenges around the transformation. So that with the event in 1965 of the first group relations conference in the U.S., some definitive choices were made. Not to duplicate the learning methods of T-groups that were conducted by MTL, to adhere to the work of Beyond, and to focus on the group unconscious. At the same time, group relations in the U.K. organized group relations training and organizational consultation work together in tandem. And that structure allowed for group relations training and organizational consultation to kind of grow and develop together, and the system psychodynamic organizational consultation perspective was born. But when group relations came to the U.S., ACRI formed in association with the Washington School of Psychiatry. And although organizational consultation was in the original bylaws, the bylaws were amended to take organizational consultation out. And then group relations training became the primary focus. And while the primary mission of ACRI was to educate the public about group dynamics and authority relations. And we see that these choices established the deep structure of ACRI and thus its culture. And so as ACRI was developing and it was trying to serve its educational mission, it had to have people who were quality, who, you know, were competent deliverers of group relations training. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the assumption was if you were hired to staff a conference, then you were deemed qualified and you were brought into ACRI as a member. And gradually, the number of members inside of ACRI exceeded the number of conferences. And so then it seemed like there had to be something else to do with the members of ACRI. And so there started to be a need for professional development, collegiality emerged, and the membership mission began to rival the education mission. And then the way in which those dual missions evolved and interacted, you know, we think established the patterns of behavior and attitudes. And this is where we see ACRI becoming like a club. And what we mean by that is that people were basically anointed, right? I mean, it was about who you knew. It was about if you went to a group relations conference and you were a star member and you got noticed in the plenary event or had been brilliant in the large group, then a director would, you know, pull you in, would hire you as an administrator and then as a consultant. And then that person would repeat the same thing. And so it became an organization filled with people who were connected through relationships and brought in because of how they had performed inside of conferences. And we think that then created the norms and values of the organization. And so that then when we worked on the transformation and understood that we were about to die because we were basically putting on conferences for ourselves and that we needed members to go to conferences, and then after members went to a few conferences, like, what was there to do next? And so what there was to do next was to join ACRI, but then they joined ACRI and they wanted to be hired. And so then you had to have a conference to make sure that the members weren't unhappy and they weren't grumbling about not having work. And there were only so many conferences and so many conference positions, and there was so much competition, right, that you had to sort of figure out how you were going to manage the group dynamics inside the organization. And so all of our focus was insular. So when we worked on the transformation and there was a vote and people to vote for it, we thought we had been successful. And that was very naive. because what looked like success in retrospect, right, was, you know, we now see as temporary compliance with no real commitment. And that the people that were not on board then worked to reinstate the membership mission. And so for this component, we see that the jolt was not strong enough. Right, and especially given that it was a loosely coupled system. So even if we could have an impact in the board or in the national, there were 8 centers around the country in which we were not having an impact on. And I guess I want to emphasize that we're talking retrospectively. Like, we weren't aware of this at the time. In getting our paper published, we went through many iterations from many external reviewers who kept acting as if we knew all this at the time and did it anyway. And I assure you that's not the case. Okay. The fourth component is the management of resistance to and ambivalence about change.